Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, June 15th, 2014. This is episode 1092. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with Citrix's ShareFile. Try ShareFile today. For a 30-day free trial, go to ShareFile.com, click the microphone, and enter Tech Guy. And by Hover.com. Hover is the best way to manage and buy your domain names. It's simple, it's honest, it's easy to use. For 10% off your first purchase, go to Hover.com and enter the promo code TTG6. This. Ooh. Where'd that come from? Somebody put a. Probably a bribe from the I'd Fund That people. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. He's the Tech Guy. This is the show where we talk about, computers and the internet and smartphones, a lot of that, home theater, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo is the number to call, 888-827-5536, toll-free from anywhere in the U.S., and or Canada. And outside those areas, you can Skype me. The website is techguylabs.com. Great place to go if you want to get in our chat room, which is always busy and buzzing. My brain's externalized into 1,000 people. And if I don't know something, I say, chat room. And they go, yes, what is thy will, my master? And I say, what's the name of that program? Remember, you know what I'm talking? And they always know. They're amazing. So you would join that collective hive mind if you visit our website, techguylabs.com. Harlequin in the chat room says, I bow to nobody. I didn't say you have to bow, just what is thy will. It's fine. That's sufficient. Are you watching the World Cup? Every 4 years, the soccer world is fixated on the championship, the World Championship of Soccer, or football, as it's called everywhere else. You know, I was thinking, you know, it'd be great to watch this online when you're at the airport or you're traveling around. And I looked around, and yeah, this is another one of those situations where if you already pay for it at home on television, you can watch it on your tablet. There's an app called Watch ESPN that has the soccer games, but in order to watch it, you have to log in to your cable company, and they then tell ESPN, yeah, he pays for ESPN, you can show it on his tablet. That's just how ESPN has to, pay respects to the cable companies. They need them still. ESPN's owned by ABC, so, you know, and Disney and all that. So they need to be nice, play nice with the cable companies because they need all that distribution for now. I think we're on the edge of where everybody just watches it on the internet. Funny thing is, if you speak Spanish, Univision, the Spanish language network in the United States, is giving it away for free. Anybody can watch it with the Univision Deportes app, which is on the iPad. You can watch any match in the World Cup. And frankly, even though I don't understand the Spanish, I think the Spanish announcers make soccer more interesting. They seem so excited. In fact, most of the rest of the world, you can watch the World Cup on the internet without logging into a cable company. It's really pretty much here in the U.S. In Canada, you can CBC, which is, of course, the CBC gets government funding. It's a government-run network, and they offer it for free. But I think it's interesting that Univision is essentially the same as an ESPN in the sense that it's a television network on cable. For some reason, they feel like, well, we don't have to do anything to make the cable companies like us. ESPN does. I have to say, I've been watching it on Univision, even though my Spanish is terrible, so I don't really know what's going on. But it's much more of a game. And by the way, no commercials. No halftime either. You just get the game, basically. Univision's owned by NBC. I didn't know that. That's interesting. Maybe they figure the cable companies don't know that either. You probably saw, we talked about it on the last show, you saw that if you are a Netflix customer using Verizon, are you? You know, Verizon Fios or Verizon DSL. You may have noticed when watching Netflix at some point, if it slows down, you'll get a little notice that says, the Verizon network is crowded right now. Adjusting video for smoother playback. In other words, we're downgrading the quality. Netflix is doing this because people assume it's Netflix's fault. Verizon sent them a cease and desist letter saying, you keep that up, we're going to sue. You can't possibly know it's our fault. Except that they do. It is. They just check with other customers in the area and they're getting the same problem. And of course, what's happening is that Verizon, like all five of the big broadband providers in the United States, does not upgrade the gear that they use to interconnect with Netflix and others like Netflix. They don't want it to work well until Netflix gives them some money. Give us some money, honey. We'll make it work better. The Comcast and Verizon and AT&T say, well, we can't do that because we shouldn't. Why should we have to pay for it? Netflix is using up all the bandwidth. Yeah, but don't your customers, isn't that why they have internet service from you? And don't you have a monopoly so they don't really have a choice? And this willful slowing down of Netflix, and of course, knowing that people would say, well, Netflix is terrible. Everything else works fine. Netflix works. They'll blame Netflix. So Netflix says, no, we're not going to do that. We're gonna let them know who's slowing us down. FCC is about to take interest. Tom Wheeler, who is a former cable company and wireless company lobbyist and now chairman of the FCC. That's a little odd. He says, we're going to get involved here because, what do you think they're going to do? They're going to slap Netflix, right? I don't know. Maybe they'll slap Verizon. Everybody knows that the reason Verizon can slow things down is because we all just blame Netflix. We just blame Netflix. Now, Marshall Kopp in our chat room points out that cable cord cutters, the folks who get their television over the internet, not from their cable, use a disproportionate amount of bandwidth, 50%, 54%, in fact, of all bandwidth. So the top 15% of users use 54% of the bandwidth. That sounds like a statistic from the cable companies. But even if that's true, that's what they're paying for. And it's a little bit disingenuous, the cable companies slowing them down intentionally and then saying, now you got to pay us money. More than disingenuous, it feels like that old protection racket, kind of, you know? Would be a shame if people were not able to watch their cheap and free movies over the internet. We would like to help you with that. All you need to do is send us a little money. Those of you who have Google Fiber don't have this problem. Google doesn't do this. And Google Fiber is apparently now coming to Portland, so where it started in Kansas City, Missouri, and Provo, Utah. Austin's next. I think they're starting to roll it out now in Austin. And then if Portland, if all the regulations get out of the way, which is a big if, Portland will get it. Why would you want it? Ooh. 1 billion bits a second, a gigabit, both ways. Ooh. That's nice. You know, up and down. Lots of speed. Great if you're using like Carbonite or an online backup service. You don't have to worry. Just boom, boom. Fast. And they don't slow down Netflix or anybody else. They don't ask them for money. They just provide you with good service. I don't know. Google doesn't even want to be in this business. But they just want to show you it can be done. And be done profitably. And that's the point. AT&T says, we want to buy DirecTV because U-verse is a failure. I don't know if that's the case. They do say they did file a statement with U.S. regulators describing why AT&T should be allowed to spend $48.5 billion to buy DirecTV. They say because it'll bring prices down. What? Usually you have fewer companies' prices go up, right? It'll bring prices down. because we can then bundle. And then when we bundle, that'll force cable companies to lower their prices. Okay. We'll see. Comcast admitted that after they merge with Time Warner, it's not going to affect the prices. I like Comcast. They at least, they're so big now, they can be honest. We certainly are not, this is their quote, we're certainly not promising customer bills are going to go down or even increase less rapidly. You can count on Comcast to raise your bill. 8888-ASK-LEO. You know, enough. Let's just talk tech. What do you say? Give me a ring. Your call's next. Beautiful Sunday afternoon. Father's Day. Father's Day. Hello, everybody. All the fathers. It's also Admission Day and Separation Day. I don't know if they're related. I just note that in my calendar. 8888-ASK-LEO, that be the number if you wish to call. And, of course, if you do, you'll be talking to Heather Hahman, the phone ranger. Heather's been screening the callers, gathering them together in one great cheer. What is the first call of the day, Heather?
Well, someone's thinking of changing religions.
Okay.
Jonathan,
they're going
LA.
From Mac to PC?
Something like that.
Hey, Jonathan, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Happy Father's Day.
Thank you. You too.
I'm actually not a father, but I've been listening to you for a very long time since I was a little kid.
You have a dad. Oh, yeah. Well, in a way, I'm your TV father.
Yes.
Your radio father.
My dad actually always plays you.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
I actually hear from time to time, and it's really neat, from fathers and sons who listened together or listen together or watch the screensavers together. That's nice. I like that. My son has no interest in technology at all, but he does want to know when he's going to inherit the family business so he can run it into the ground, probably. What can I do for you?
I have an iPhone 5S. I have a chance to jump carriers, and I'm thinking of going back to Android, but I haven't had one in about 3 years.
Who's your carrier right now?
Verizon, and I'm just eating up data, so I need unlimited from T-Mobile.
One nice thing you can do is take that phone over to T-Mobile. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, the 5S on Verizon, in fact, the 5 as well, they have a SIM card, and they're not locked. So T-Mobile would very much wants you to know that you can just come over, bring your phone, and they'll take you. And you'll save money on your data plan. I use T-Mobile, too. I'm very happy with their data. T-Mobile's done very well as the uncarrier. And some of it's a little hype, a little marketing. But they do, in fact, do some things that the other carriers don't do. They have to. They're number four. They have to try harder.
Yeah.
Not for much longer. It looks like Sprint's going to merge with T-Mobile. But that's another story. If it's allowed. So just take your phone over. Now, if you don't want to take your phone over, the closest thing to an iPhone in the Android space is the HTC One, the 2014 edition.
I've heard you talk about that one.
Very iPhone-like. It's bigger. It's 5 inches. For some people, that's going to be a little disorienting because the iPhone's so small. It's 4 inches. Now when I go use an iPhone...
Another factor I'm thinking about.
Yeah, well, it's one reason people do shift from the iPhone. It's one certainly was a factor for me. I like a little bit bigger screen. Not huge. I have some 6-inch phones that are a little big, but 5 inches is about as big as you can get. Great screen. It's Retina. It's, in fact, higher dots per inch, higher pixels per inch than the iPhone. Has the best speakers in the business on the front, too, where they ought to be instead of piping out the back. Android's different than the iPhone, but I think almost all the apps that you want to use are on Android.
They're
very few. You can look, but there are very few apps now that aren't on both platforms. So I think the M8 is a great choice. That's the code name for it, or the number. So you can go into a T-Mobile store and say, "I'd like to buy the M8." If you want to go Android, that would be my recommendation for an iPhone person.
Well, I mean, I don't have a problem using Android. It's just kind of like, what if I'm going to switch? Is there something that I may as well go to and take advantage of something Android's offering that iPhone's not?
You know, the difference is more a difference in philosophy than in capability. Android is more open and it allows applications to do more. Apple has decided not to do that because they feel it's unsafe. So applications are sandboxed on an iPhone. And you know this because you can only buy applications from Apple or download them from Apple. They check them. They don't let you can't use an alternate keyboard, for instance. You can only use the Apple keyboard. You can't, you know, you can't change the way the camera works. By the way, all that's changing with iOS 8 in the fall. But as of now, you can't change the way the camera works. You have to use the Apple camera or some other camera. But you can't change the Apple camera. Things like that. On the Android, it's kind of a free for all. that I don't think it makes it less safe, frankly. As long as you don't do dumb things. I like Android. I'm very happy in the Android space. People might say the iPhone has a better overall look and feel and design. It's more carefully thought out. But that's because Apple controls it so tightly. Android is less controlled, so there are absolutely horrifically ugly applications. But most of the applications are very comparable. I find Android a good choice. But it's the biggest difference is going to be the hardware. Only Apple makes an iPhone, and really there's only one top-of-the-line iPhone, the 5S. There are many, many, many choices. Some people find that confusing in Android. I mean, there's a ton of choices. The current top of the crop is the Galaxy S5.
I was thinking of the Galaxy. It's either the 5 or the 4.
They're great phones. I'm not fans of what Samsung does in terms of its user interface and all the apps it puts on there, but a lot of people love them. They're the best-selling, easily the best-selling phones, even better than the iPhone. I think the HTC One is my favorite. It's the one I carry. LG just came out with a G3. We should see it in the next few weeks. Don't forget the Moto X. It's a year old now, but I think it's a great phone. A little smaller, maybe a little more comfortable for somebody coming from the iPhone. That's going to have an update in the next month or two. And I think that's got the most interesting features. For instance, you can talk to it without touching it. It'll show you as it sleeps time and a notification so you can see what's going on without picking up your phone. There's some really nice features. It knows when you're driving. It knows when you're asleep. It changes its behavior based on what you're doing. Those are features that Motorola's put into its phones that I think are unique too. So there's, you know, the problem is there's a lot of choices on the Android side. You're going to get an iPhone, you're going to get the iPhone. It's a lot easier.
How would all those... Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
How would all those features affect the battery life? Because I had an S4 for a couple of days. I borrowed one, and I just turned off all the extra features, like when you look away and the hand swiping. I just... to save battery and just...
In general, battery life, you know, is similar to the iPhone. The difference is the iPhone, you can't remove the battery. So when you run out, You have to have a... external battery to charge it or plug it in. Many phones, including the Galaxy S5, you can open up the back, put a second back or battery. And when I buy phones with removable batteries, I usually buy a couple of extra batteries so that if the battery dies halfway through the day, no problem. I got an extra battery. I just pop it in. So those have limitless, and batteries are cheap, $10-$20. So those have limitless power in that respect. Just on a single battery, on a single charge, iPhones and Android phones are roughly equivalent. I'm getting 16 hours on my HTC One without turning off any features. That's pretty good. That's what I want from a phone. I want to be able to charge it while I sleep for 8 hours and then have it go the rest of the day, plug it in at night. And that's exactly what I get. It's almost exactly 16 hours on the HTC One. I think that's superb. Both the HTC One and the Galaxy S5 have super saver modes that kick in when you get to low power and give you many more hours, too. So I think battery, I guess you could argue Android's got a better choice than. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy at Father's Day, talking high tech. Let's get on to our next call. Richard, Placentia, California. Hi, Richard. Leo Laporte here.
Leo, good morning to you and happy Father's Day again.
Thank you.
I appreciate you taking my call. My question is, I still have yet to replace my old XP system, desktop. And my question is, I've had good success with the Dell laptops.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of a Dell guy. Do you like the all-in-one or the straight-up desktop? What's your...
You know, the all-in-one is great, and I've been very happy with the Dell, the XPS 1 and its successors. When I first played with it, it's really Dell's version of an iMac. So it's a big screen, in most cases 27 inches, although they have various sizes.
Mm-hmm.
The new ones are touch, and I would recommend that if you're getting a Windows 8 machine. It's elegant. So, you know, if it's in somewhere where people will see it and you want it to be fewer wires and kind of a nicer look, it's great. The only negative on an all-in-one is that if something breaks on it, you know, you can't really replace it. On a tower case, you can open it up, put a new hard drive in.
That would be a negative for me on that.
Yeah.
Because I was in a hotel in there. It was an all-in-one Lenovo. And it was like, this is great. I really like this. But I'm thinking just to keep it simple, going with the desktop. And, you know, I like the, you recommended one time when I got my daughter's laptop for school. I went with the Latitude versus the Inspiron.
Good. We had that conversation, the consumer version versus the business version.
Exactly.
If you can spend a little more, it's always better to get the higher quality. They're going to be more reliable.
So even if I go with the tower, the XPS versus the Inspiron?
I like the XPS. I generally, it's the same thing. Whether you're on a laptop or a desktop, the components are better. You're spending a little more, but you're getting a little bit more. I'm just watching a video on YouTube on replacing the hard drive in the Dell XPS 1. Now, my experience in doing it on an iMac is it really requires bringing it in. You need a special suction cup to remove the screen. It's really tricky inside. And that's because these all-in-ones are essentially laptops. They're just sideways laptops. They have to put everything very tightly in there. It looks like the XPS is a little easier to open. Still not going to be as easy as upgrading a tower or servicing a tower. So if serviceability and upgradability are more important to you than looks and compactness, then you're probably better off getting a tower.
Okay. And last week you were talking to a gentleman about on the Office software. Do you like the monthly subscriptions versus buying it outright?
Yeah, I think it's a better deal. It's less expensive. You get a lot of extra features. If you get the Office 365 home version, you can install it on five different computers. That could include your daughter's, for instance. You're paying less than $10 a month. So if you get the sticker shock on going out and buying a boxed copy of Office is steep. It's $500.
It is,
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And the advantage of getting the subscription is it's always up to date, the next version and everything, and it just makes it easier, I think. This is how Microsoft wants to sell it. They keep the boxed version for people who just refuse to do it, including businesses, which often do. But I think that the subscription is the way to go.
Right. Am I going backwards with Windows 7 Professional versus 8 or 8.1?
Well, you're going to want a touchscreen if you're getting Windows 8. That would be the only thing I would say is that means a greater expense because you have to buy a touchscreen. And on a desktop, it doesn't. Windows 8 doesn't make a lot of sense if you have a big screen on a desktop because you're not going to use, one of the features, the whole thing about Windows 8 is they wanted to do a touch interface and in addition to a desktop interface. But when you're using a desktop computer or a big screen computer, you want to be in the desktop. You don't want the touch interface. First, one thing, reaching out and touching a big screen, it's just work. But it's also, you don't want to have a single application filling that screen. The whole point of having a big screen is having many windows open. Now, right. 8.1 has kind of solved that a little bit. They allow you to have Metro apps, those tiled apps, in Windows. And I think going forward, Windows is going to get, they're going to back down a little bit on this whole idea of touch stuff. Microsoft realizes nobody really wants it. On the other hand, it is the newest version of Windows and does fix a lot of things under the hood that Windows 7 has broken. File copy is the biggest one for me. File copy has just been so broken since Windows 95. And they finally, after all this time, they fixed it. File copy was so broken on Windows until Windows 8 that they actually included a secret application called RoboCopy so that you could reliably copy files because dragging files from one folder to the other was so hideously unreliable and slow. So they put a command line app. They said, we better give you a better one. And it's like, do it right in the first place. And they've done that, Windows 8.
Great.
Security's better. Performance is better. 8 is the new version. It's better. But they saddle us all with this really stupid tiled interface, which I'm not a fan of. Having said that, I've kind of come along. And I'm finally saying, all right. You don't want to buy a four-year-old operating system or three-year-old operating system. You want to kind of get the latest because it'll last longer and it'll be updated and so forth. So I just feel like Microsoft's forced me into it, and having been forced into it and having used it now for a year, I'm used to it. You learn, you move your mouse to the lower right-hand corner, that launches the charms, opens the charms. You move it to the upper left-hand corner, you see what apps are running. You just learn it. It's not intuitive. It's not obvious. But once you learn it, you go, okay, I guess I can live with it. My big problem with Windows 8 is not how, partly it's how obscure the commands are. Mostly it's just that it's a hodgepodge of touch and desktop. They couldn't make up their mind. They did both. And that's never good. In anything, it's never good. If your toaster had three ways to toast a piece of toast, it's useless, it's unnecessary, and it's confusing. Your toaster works and is easy, and you don't need to read the manual because there's one way to toast a piece of toast. And they do have some toasters that have special buttons for bagels and stuff. I throw it away. I don't use them. I want one way to open a window. I want one to copy a file. I want one way to toast a piece of toast. You make it too hybrid, too many different things. It's confusing. That's all. That's kind of my attitude. But I've gotten used to it, and I use Windows 8 now. I stopped using Windows 7 because, we got to move with the times, right? Mike in Portland, Maine, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oops, let me push the button.
Last call because I'm going way back now.
Where are you going? Well, he was going from XP to Windows 7 or 8. You're not using Windows 98 ME, are you?
No, not quite that bad. I just went from XP to Windows 7 on my newer computers, but I have an old computer that has XP on it, and I just read about, actually I got it from another radio show, a hack that will allow you to continue to update Windows XP by making Microsoft think it is Windows Embedded POS 2009, which is really Windows XP from what I understand.
That's accurate.
And I'm wondering what you think about that particular hack and if you think it will work and if it's worth doing.
I wouldn't recommend it. You're going to modify a register. It's very simple. You just modify a registry key to say, this is not Windows. This is not Windows 7. This is not Windows XP. This is Windows XP Embedded Edition. Now, there are two kinds of embedded. Embedded means it's for not kind of general purpose computers, but things like ATMs or point of sale systems, stuff like that. There's the embedded ones where actually the whole of Windows is in a ROM chip, is in firmware, and runs out of firmware. That's one kind of Windows. We're not talking about that. The Windows XP for embedded systems is actually the same Windows XP as the one sold on disk, except for this one registry thing. However, Microsoft has said, we don't want you to do this, not because they don't want you to have updates, well, partly that, but partly because it may not work. You may end up getting some code that isn't intended for Windows XP desktop. And furthermore, I'm sure they'll block it next month. So, no harm doing it. I don't think it's going to be a long-term fix. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. Was that a question for everybody, Heather? Something you'd like to ask the world, or was it just for me? What? I mean, you said you had a question.
It was private for Burke, sorry.
Oh, Quiet.
I was asking you.
You're probably wondering what that bandage is on Burke's arm. He was frying chicken and got knocked into the fryer. Poor guy. He's got a little burn on his arm there. Burke is I guess he's our screwdriver. He's the guy, if something breaks, he comes in and he fixes it. He can fix anything. Amazing fellow. Every studio should have a Burke. Don't you
exactly.
think?
Exactly. Well, that's why I asked him my burning question.
Yeah. My arm is sagging. What should I do? I mean, the mic arm. You've seen that happen, right?
Yes.
Nothing worse. A mic arm that just loses its spring.
And it has a mind of its own.
And it just slowly sags to the, sinks to the desk, and you have to bend over as you're talking. I hate it when that happens. Let's move on to another call. I finished that last call, right? I think I did. I think I answered it sufficiently. Russ Wheelersburg, Ohio. Hello, Russ.
Hello, Leo. Happy Father's Day.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Let's see. Two things. First of all, when is your mom coming back to visit? I want the audience knitting while you're...
Yeah. Well, she does it. She just does it in Providence where she's watching the video stream of the show. But I know I miss... I have a chair, a throne for mom in the office, just waiting for her to come out here and knit. Love you, Mom. I do wish you were out here. It's hard to have your mom so far away. My dad's nearby, though, so that's good. My dad's just down the peninsula a little ways. I'm going to call him up after the show.
Good. Do me a favor. We're watching you live, and my wife would like to see a picture of Ozzy. If you can, do you have a camera that you could show him?
I have a lot of pictures of Ozzy. Ozzy's our little papillon. He's our studio mascot. He recently got a rather elaborate haircut. He's actually just sitting over here in the chair. John's going to bring him to me. And he doesn't look as papillonish as he did. He's a little sad right now.
Oh.
Yeah, because he says, what did you do to my gorgeous coat? But it was summertime and it was hot. And so now he's joined me. And he's a papillon. He's purebred. So he's got those big butterfly ears. And he kind of looks like a gremlin. You wouldn't want to give him water after midnight. Or feed him after me, because he might turn into something. He's about 7 years old. His birthday is I just looked it up. I think his birthday is in March, so he just had his seventh birthday.
Great, thank you so much. I've got a question. My sister-in-law took a cruise last year, and she saw something in the lobby that she asked me to get for her. I'm kind of tech support for the family, and when I first heard it, it sounded really easy, and then I started thinking about it, and it's a little trickier than I thought.
What is it?
She saw a cage with a parrot in it. It was a video of a parrot, and it really looked live to her. Now, you know, I could put a small screen of some sort connected to a VCR, but I like, and I can take a video of a parrot in a pet store and make a TV.
So she wants a TV parrot.
Yeah, TV parrot, yeah. And it would be nice if it could be autonomous in a standalone.
Well, did the parrot respond to people in the cruise on the cruise ship?
No,
no, it just stood there and looked around and
yeah,
it looked alive. It didn't talk. It once in a while burst into song. The love boat.
Yeah. Is there something that?
The thing that's going to make it the most realistic, of course, is the highest definition. You can shoot, and the highest definition screen you can publish it on. Now, HD is probably pretty good, and that's, I'm sure, all they had on the cruise ship. But if you really want to blow your, was it your wife or your wife's sister?
No, my sister-in-law.
Your sister-in-law. You want to blow your sister-in-law away, you would shoot 4K video of a parrot. That's ultra-high def, and you'd put it on an ultra-high def screen. The good news is ultra-high def screens are not very expensive. They're under $1,000 in some cases. Samsung just announced a 60 hertz, I think it's 21 inch, maybe it's 27. Yeah, it's 27 inch 4K display for $600. So get that display. Now you're going to shoot 4K video, and there's a few ways to do that. There are some cameras and even camera phones that will shoot 4K video. They would probably be okay, but the best results it would be to go, rent. How important is this to you? You really want the sister-in-law to be happy?
I don't want to blow the budget on it.
Well, we got $600. Now you're going to have to attach a computer to it. My recommendation would be one of those little Intel NUCs, NUC. That's the new unit of computing. They're so small. They're about the size of a hockey puck. You can actually attach it to the back of the monitor. It has HDMI out, so it can drive the monitor. So now it's a pretty compact thing. You turn the monitor on its side, by the way. And you're going to have it play back in a continuous loop, this video that you shoot. So the final step is just make that video as good as you can.
Right.
You can go out and rent a RED camera or a Canon cinema camera, the high-end cinema cameras, and shoot 4K video. Even a DSLR or a pretty good point-and-shoot can shoot 4K video. So you could rent those fairly inexpensively from a camera store. We're talking maybe $50, $100. Now you've got to find a parrot.
Yeah, I know. I can find one at a pet store.
And what I would suggest is shooting a fairly long, 10 minutes would be plenty. 5 minutes even would be plenty. And the key is to find an edit point. You know how when you make wallpaper for your desktop, you're looking at an edge that can repeat because it'll match up the next edge. Same thing with the video. You're going to hope that parrot doesn't move around a lot. And if you can find a point where it's sitting still exactly the same way as it was sitting still 5 minutes ago, you can make that your loop point, your beginning and your end. And then it will be seamless and it will be indistinguishable from a live parrot that doesn't do much.
Perfect. The Nook is what I didn't know about.
Yeah, those are great. They're very inexpensive, a couple hundred, $300. Intel created this. NUC stands for New Unit of Computing. Go figure what that means. But that's the idea. And I think it's an interesting concept. And by the way, that's we're talking a fairly silly application, but think about it. If you were a restaurant and you wanted to have menus with videos interspersed of your delicious meals, or there's lots of reasons you might want to use this for a display, a point of purchase, all sorts of stuff. And now because of high res, 4K video is, it looks like you're looking through a window. It looks so good, you would, in fact, be confused about whether there was a parrot. Put it in the cage.
Perfect. would the video be on the Nook? Does it have a hard drive? Or
Yeah. Probably what you would do is you put it on an SD card and just have it playing off the SD card.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it has a little SD card reader. But they do come with a hard drive.
Yeah.
If you go to Newegg, newegg.com, and search for NUC, you'll see a whole lot of different Nooks.
Perfect.
You could do it with an iPad, I guess. That actually would be also possible. Put a little video on an iPad and stick it in there. You can buy the older iPads for less. You'd want to get a Retina, though, right? The higher quality display, the better. In fact, you could shoot it. Okay, here's another way. Thank you, Dr. Mom. She says, just get an iPad, use the iPad camera, you know, put it on a tripod or something, shoot a parrot. Now the video's already on the iPad. Just put the iPad in the cage and loop it there. You could do that, too. Nexus 10 would do it. All right. You guys are smarter than I am. I maybe got a little fancy on that one. We're going to take a break. Thank you for the call. Great question. Ozzy says hello. He's shedding all over me right now. Fortunately, I'm wearing a white shirt, so you can't tell. Please don't shed the black fur, okay, Ozzy? 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number, the website, techguylabs.com. Isn't a Nook a funny name? Who, you know, Intel is not great. They need to hire a company. There are companies that do this, a naming firm. Because the Pentium sounded like toothpaste. Terrible name for a processor. And so they improved it. Their successor to the Pentium was the Core. The Core processor? That's your name? Yeah, we call it the Core. And now this new little hockey puck sized. They could have called it a puck, but no, they called it a Nook. What is a Nook? The new unit of computing. What did you think it were? What did you think it was? Yeah, all right. 8888 Ask Leo. Website techguylabs.com. We'll put links there to all of the stuff we talk about on the show. And I encourage you to add your comments, your thoughts, like Dr. Mom just did in our chat room. You could also go to the website and say, hey, you know, Leo, you described a very expensive way to do that parrot in a fake parrot in a cage, but you could do it with a tablet, too. You could do that in your comments at techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater, digital photography, and turning your TV screen into a live bird, apparently. I realize this is, John brought me this, our studio manager. We actually have a parakeet, a plastic battery-powered parakeet that moves when you move. Doesn't fool anybody, but it might be cheaper and easier to use this than set up a high-res screen. Hey, we solve a lot of interesting problems. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Mark's on the line from Syracuse. iDoc Mark, who also has a Papillon named Lulu.
I just put a link on the chat if anybody wants to see Lulu.
She looks just like Ozzy.
Yeah, they are side by side. If you click on that link, it's
yeah.
A link.
Can you just take this bird and remove its head? Thank you. That's starting to get annoying. Hi, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing, Leo?
Very well. Welcome.
Are your kids getting to see you today?
Yeah, we'll figure out something. I think Henry's in L.A., but Abby's. I saw Abby already, so yeah.
Good. Father's Day present today, birthday present tomorrow. The one Lulu doesn't like is Ann got me a dog that's about four times as big.
Uh-oh.
We thought it would be a friend for Lulu, but we think it's 10 weeks old, and we think that Lulu doesn't seem enthralled with her.
Oh.
But I also ended up with my first iPad. It's an iPad Mini Retina.
Hey, congratulations. How do you like it?
Thanks. It seems real nice. It's a lot like just a bigger version of my iPhone, except it's not a phone. But
yeah, that's kind of what it is. In fact, people, when the iPad first came out in 2010, that was exactly what they said. Well, what's the big deal? It's just an iPhone with a bigger screen. But, you know, something about that 10-inch screen makes a difference in how you use it and how you perceive it. for looking at pictures, you know, it really is a different experience. I like
it. Much better for pictures, TV shows, and other things.
Yeah, and you're an eye doctor, so you probably enjoy the retina, the clarity of the screen.
Love it. Yep. Love that part. Yep. But I got it by itself.
You know, I know some, by the way, I know some optometrists who I think use iPads for the reading tests.
It's real easy.
Yeah, I think you could. I think there's software for that. Yeah. I'm sorry.
There are programs.
Yeah.
So, but I got it plain, no cover, no anything, and I saw so many different models in the Apple Store.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the question. Any suggestions?
You know, buying an iPad case is a very personal thing, is it not?
Yeah.
I have one case that I really like that makes it look like one of those Moleskine notebooks. You know, it has even had... And the nice thing about that case is if you use it, nobody knows you're carrying around an iPad. So it has some stealth capabilities. When you go to a cafe, it looks like you've just got your little paper notebook under your arm. And then, of course, you open it up. They know you've got an iPad, but not always. I'm trying to remember who makes this wonderful cover. I'm not remembering.
It just seems if it's a big bulky one, well, where's the big advantage? Over
well, that's right.
Air?
That's
I've
right.
Got a MacBook Air.
Here's the Dodo case. I don't use a case. Let me think. No, I use this case. The Dodo case is one of them that really turns it into a book, and I love it. They have a variety of very attractive cases. That's what actually I use on my Mini with Retina display, my iPad Mini. It's protective. It's got like a bamboo frame around it, so it's quite protective. But you're right, it adds bulk. If what do you want a case for, I guess, is the question.
I'm not sure. What do I want the iPad for?
Well, yeah, it's kind of, you know, the iPad I use here at work, I don't keep in a case. But then I'm not likely to drop it because it's on a stand and I'm not walking around all the time. So the case does a couple of things. It protects it in case you drop it.
Yeah.
It also hides it. So, you know, an iPad just sitting out in the open looks maybe a little bit like something somebody might want to lift. If you want a case that's compact but protects it, doesn't really hide what the case is, Spec makes some excellent SPECK cases for the iPad. I like the candy shells I've used for a long time on my iPad Mini. It has the advantage of it's just basically a shell that you put the iPad in that protects it if you drop it.
Some have keyboards.
Now, if you want a keyboard, yes, that's another thing you can do. And Logitech makes the keyboard case. It's less of a case and more of a keyboard, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you dropped it, you'd break the keyboard and the iPad. It's called the ultra thin keyboard cover for, and they make it for the iPad Air. I think they make it for the Retina as well. It's expensive.
You lose the convenience of the safety.
Well, now it turns it into, but what it does is it turns it into a laptop, right? Because
yeah.
You're carrying around a keyboard. This is kind of like the Microsoft Surface. It's a Bluetooth keyboard. Does a good job. Doesn't do a great job protecting it. Really, they call it a case because the keyboard folds over the back of the iPad so you can hold the two together. But again, I don't think it protects it. In fact, it's likely you'd break both if you dropped it. So, it depends what you want to do. If you want to protect it, there are certainly great cases that look good that will protect it, but they add bulk. If the Spec case does a good job of protecting it without adding much bulk, it's just really a shell for it. That's the Spec candy shell. It also adds grip. And as you may have noticed already, the iPad Mini, like most Apple stuff, is slippery. And that's one reason people drop it a lot. This is a massive market. Apple, by creating the iPad and before it the iPhone, created a market for accessories that just doesn't stop. Another reason you might want a case, and this is what I use my case for, my Dodo case, is as a stand. So that's really the biggest reason. If you ever want to use the iPad without holding it hands-free, you're going to want a stand.
But for that, how is just Apple's $35 thing or whatever?
Terrible. Do not buy the Apple case stand. First of all, not protective. Falls off all the time. Floppy. The iPad is, you want a stand that's more rigid than that. And Apple really overcharges for that piece of vinyl. I don't recommend Apple's case, whatever they're called, the smart.
Can you take another very brief
cover.
Question?
Sure.
A daughter about graduates next week, goes off to FIT in Manhattan, Fashion Institute of
Technology. Congratulations. Is she going to be a designer?
Possibly. She's a fabulous artist.
That's wonderful.
She wants to be able to travel.
Good for her.
So she had a four-year-old MacBook Pro, and at the Apple store, they explained to Anne why, if she's into fashion and design, she really needs the biggest, best of everything.
Yes. You need to spend $7,000, Dad.
No, but it was a lot. It was the top of the line 13-inch with everything.
Do not get the top of the line. I disagree with them. I do think the 13-inch MacBook Air is an excellent choice for students. It's what my son brings to college. If the 11-inch is less expensive, but I think the screen is not as big, and she's going to put designs on it, get the 13-inch Air. Get the base unit. You do not need to upgrade RAM or processor.
They got they sold in the 13-inch MacBook Pro.
Pro, okay.
The biggest, all the memory, all the everything
else.
That's
a nice one. It's expensive, and it does have a Retina display. Perhaps for an artist, that's a good idea.
And then they sold me an adapter.
So you're acting as if you had nothing to do with this, Mark.
No, well, I didn't with the other part. But, and it's an adapter for an Ethernet cable, so we can plug the old MacBook Pro into the new one. And they said, run migration assistant on both.
Right.
It transfers everything.
Yep.
And five tries, it didn't. So what I...
Well, it can only it'll translate most of it.
Well, I say it didn't work.
It didn't work.
We'd say start now, and it wasn't working. And I figured the next step, I made an appointment tomorrow at the Apple store.
Yeah, they'll do the same thing. It should work. That should work. I've done that many times. I generally don't, when I install or get a new computer, I don't like to copy everything from the old computer. I really only want to copy my data. I don't like to copy settings and everything. I know it's a pain. Now I've got to re-enter passwords and settings. But I like a clean install if I can, as clean as possible. So my idea, the way I do it is I always have a backup of my data anyway. Just restore the backup to the new machine and leave it at that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte. The tech guy. Back to the phones we go. Sam, Rialto, California. You're next. Hi, Sam.
Hey, I just had a quick question about rooting my phone.
Yes.
I have an HTC One M8. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to get some of the pros and cons for that.
Yeah, so rooting...
Any good ROMs.
Yeah, rooting on Android is very different than jailbreaking on iPhone. On the iPhone, you can do so little with it that... The jailbreak is to make it so that you don't have to buy apps from Apple. You can buy them from other people. You can do that with a checkbox on Android, so that's no big deal. What rooting on Android does is it gives you super user or admin privileges. It means you can do anything, including dumb things like erase the phone. And that's why phones don't typically come rooted. It's always been Google and Android's position that this is fine. This is your computer. You should be able to run it as root if you wish. But we're not going to ship it that way. We'll just make it relatively easy for you to do. And if you could figure it out, well, then presumably you know enough about it to know what not to do. There are some manufacturers, though, and there are some carriers that don't want you to root because if you root, then they're afraid you'll maybe try to bypass restrictions or uninstall apps. They want you to have things like that. So sometimes the manufacturer makes it hard. Samsung, for instance, tries its darndest.
I only saw a YouTube video on it, but they don't ever go over any of the cons of what I could do. How easy is it to erase something you might like, something important?
You can always get back. If you do it right, you can always get back to where you started. So it's not really very dangerous. Here's the key. HTC is one of the manufacturers that allows you to do this. In fact, the rooting of an Android phone has several steps. First, you have to kind of unlock it because normally it's locked. The boot ROM is locked. HTC will do this for you. They have a website. They'll unlock it for you. Then you have to install software that gives you root permissions. Every phone is different, and I mean every phone. I don't even mean like every HTC One is different from a Samsung Galaxy S5. The HTC One from Verizon is different from the HTC One from T-Mobile, is different from the unlocked HTC One. So you have to be very careful to use the procedure for the particular model that you have. Now, where do you find those procedures? Well, there are a number of places. I would be careful about YouTube videos. I'd start at a website called XDA Developers. It's xda-developers.com. This is where the true experts hang out in the forums, and where the rooting procedure for virtually any Android phone that is rootable, not all are, But any Android phone that's rootable will be here, and they'll have a step-by-step. Follow the instructions as if you are following a recipe for building a bomb. Because what you don't want to do is brick your phone. So if you do the, you know, for instance, you download the files for the wrong model, you can turn your. But once you've done it successfully, and if you follow the instructions, you will do it. Once you've done it successfully, then you have something called a recovery ROM on your phone that allows you to get back to where you started. It allows you to try different ROMs. And that's nice. That means you can change the phone at will. What a lot of people...
Do you know any good ones?
Well, what the first thing a lot of people do with the HTC One is they will put the Google Play Edition ROM on there. That's the vanilla version of the HTC One that Google sells. That'll give you... That takes away all the Sense... Most of the Sense features. A lot of people try that. I don't know, frankly, what ROMs are available for the HTC One.
Because I
rooted my first one and modded it, but I haven't done this with the M8 because I really like it. I don't want to change it. But if you look at XDA developers, they'll not only show you what ROMs are out there, what firmware is out there, but what ones, you know, what the features of each are. And all of them are different. But remember, they're all done kind of by, I don't want to say hackers, but by amateurs who are messing with the phone. And so it's not always perfect. There's often problems. Nothing that you can't get around. I think that, you know, the point is that it's your computer, and a smartphone is a computer. You should get to do whatever you want with it, and including screwing it up. And rooting allows you to screw it up if you want. But it also allows you to customize it pretty much infinitely. I love the HTC One. I actually haven't rooted this one just because I love it. I don't want to change it. But if you do, go to xda-developers.com and make sure that you follow the steps exactly. Joyce is on the line from San Dimas, California. Hi, Joyce. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi.
Hey.
Enjoyed all your conversations.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm 83 years old, and I bought a computer 5 years ago.
Okay.
And what I do on it is all the my email to my Shih Tzu groups.
Oh, you have one of those little dogs, those cute little dogs? Yeah, they're great.
I don't know about your dog. And, and you know, Facebook games and Words with Friends. And,
oh, good.
You know, things like that.
Perfect.
Okay. I have no idea if I have Wi-Fi. I'm not that savvy. I have...
You're able to get online somehow. How do you get online?
What do you mean?
Well, all of the stuff you just described is actually going out on the internet, right?
Yeah, I turn my computer on.
And it just works. It's amazing.
Verizon is my provider.
Verizon, there you go.
And anyway, I want something, like I was in the hospital a while back, mm-hmm. and I thought, gee, you know, I wish I had a tablet or something that doesn't cost me extra money.
Yeah.
I bought a Kindle last year. But even the geeks couldn't get the Verizon network on it. So I said...
No, Kindle, yeah. So
what else can I get?
I'll tell you what, my mom's your age. She has desktops, she has laptops, but I gave her an iPad and she just loves it.
Yeah.
And really pretty much uses it all the time. Everything you just described, you can do it on an iPad. It's convenient. It's lightweight. The key for you is you're going to need Wi-Fi, and I'll tell you how to do that when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We were talking to Joyce in San Dimas. Poor Joyce, I'm sorry I had to put you back on hold, but the exigencies of broadcast radio required it.
I have the iPad. I mean, let me get an iPad.
Yeah, and now the key on the iPad is... Well, there's two ways to get internet access on an iPad.
Okay.
If you travel around a lot...
I don't, but I mean, I have to wait for transportation.
I didn't do this for my mom, but you could get an iPad that has built-in data from the cell phone network. So they call that 4G or LTE. You have to pay an additional $20 a month for that access.
Okay.
But then that iPad is online everywhere.
Okay.
And every carrier offers it. Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, Sprint, all four of them. So pick the one that has the best signal in your area.
Okay. See, I just have a track phone. I don't use that except, you know.
Right. Just like my mom. Exactly. Because she doesn't need a cell phone. That's one way to go. I didn't do that for mom because, like you, she doesn't drive. She rarely uses the iPad out of the house. Now, if you thought you were going to be going to the doctor a lot.
Yeah, and, you know, I could, if I want to, I don't have to come back to the computer. I want to use it in the kitchen or something.
Well, for that, if you're just going to, yeah, that's exactly. Or if you're just going to do that, you can also add wireless networking to your existing Verizon internet access.
Well, now, when you say wireless, does that mean my modem should not be plugged in? I don't quite understand that part.
Yeah, well, your modem stays plugged in because that's what's connecting to the internet. But then the modem is plugged into something that transmits. It's called a Wi-Fi access point.
So should I get a different modem?
Nope. Now, you can call Verizon and say, hey, can you give me the Wi-Fi version of this modem? You may even have it already. They may not have set it up for you.
I doubt it. It's 5 years old.
Yeah. You know what? It might not be a bad idea to get a new modem anyway because they've improved and that one's...
Well, it works.
So, and if you say I want a Wi-Fi, they'll charge you a rental fee for it of a few bucks a month.
Okay.
And now what? That only goes within the house. It only goes about 100 feet.
Well, I want to use it. I definitely want to use it when I'm out.
Okay. Then you should, when you go to the Apple store, you should say, I want a, or T-Mobile. You can go to any cell phone store or the Apple store and say, I want one that has 4G. That's just wireless internet data from the cell phone company.
Okay.
And you'll be paying that cell phone company, Verizon or AT&T, whoever it is, you'll be paying them about 20 bucks a month for that.
Would I get the things that I currently get on my own computer, like my own Words with Friends and stuff, or would that just be random?
It's depends. Words with Friends, you would have the same account.
I would have?
Yeah. So, in fact, Words with Friends is even better on the iPad. Everybody I know who plays Words with Friends plays it on the iPad. And it's your account. So you log into your account, if you can remember your login and password, and it'll be the same games you're already playing.
Okay.
That's not true.
Brand of iPad?
They're all made by Apple. How's your vision? Is it pretty good, or do you...
My vision?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's fine.
The iPad Air is a little bigger. It's 10 inches. They do make a smaller one if compactness is important to you. But
no.
I would get the iPad Air.
Airy.
Yeah, no, I'd get the iPad Air. It's small enough. It's only 10 inches and it's...
The iPad what?
Air.
Air?
As in lighter than.
I'm sorry?
As in lighter than air.
Okay.
Well, that's what they want you to think. It's about a pound.
Okay.
And then you'll probably don't need a whole lot of... The only other choice you'll make besides 4G... iPad Air is how much storage there is on that, and you probably don't need a lot. 32 gigs is plenty.
Okay.
Then you can put on there. It comes with a word processor. It comes with a browser. So your Jitsu sites, you'll just be able to go to in the browser.
I go to Facebook and stuff.
Facebook, yep. You can install the Facebook app.
Okay.
In fact, I bet you'll call me in 6 weeks and say, I don't ever use my computer anymore. I just use the iPad. My mom, that's what happened with her. She loves her iPad.
Okay, can I order this on the computer? Because I don't even know where an Apple store is.
You absolutely can. Now,
okay.
The decision you're going to have to make is which cell phone carrier you want to use. You're in San Dimas. I'm thinking Verizon's probably the best.
I don't have to have a Verizon cell phone.
No.
Okay.
You're going to make a new account that's just, it's like the Air is the cell phone.
Okay, okay.
So you can go to Verizon's website and order it from them.
Okay. I ordered their iPad. Is that what
you're going to get exactly what I described, an iPad Air, 32 gigabytes, but you're going to get it from Verizon,
okay.
And they will set you up with an account. They can do it all over the internet with your computer.
Okay.
And it'll arrive at your door, and you'll have to create, when you first get the iPad, you'll have to set it up. One advantage of going to the Apple store is they'll help you set it up, but I understand that's difficult.
If there's one around here, I'll have to find out.
Is your son pretty? Yeah, there's one nearby. Is your son pretty computer literate?
I'm fair.
But how about your son? Is he?
No.
Not at all. You're the geek.
He hooked up my PC and everything.
You're the geek in the family, huh?
he uses one at work, but it's just, to the factory and back, not general.
It's nice if you can get to an Apple. If your son can bring it to an Apple store, the one advantage is they're super patient and super nice, and they'll set it all up for you.
Okay.
So there is an advantage to that. But if your son says, "Oh, Mom, I'm busy," you can mail order this, and I'm telling you, you are going to be very happy, Joyce.
Okay, and I can use it in the doctor's office
everywhere, as long as Verizon works there.
Wi-Fi.
Yeah, you don't need Wi-Fi.
Oh.
Instead of Wi-Fi. The only thing is that the doctor's office, some places, if they're in big buildings with metal walls.
I don't know. I see people using them in the office.
Yeah. So. If a cell phone doesn't work somewhere, neither will the iPad because it has to penetrate the wall. But most places where you are, you're not going to have any trouble. Okay. And occasionally the doctor will have Wi-Fi for his patients. And if they have that, you can use that on the same iPad. It can do both.
Right. And I don't need a router. I have a router on here.
Yeah, you're going to continue for your computer to use your router, although if you want to save money and you find you're not using the computer, you can now discontinue your Verizon Internet account.
Oh, I don't want to do that.
Oh, okay.
Okay, no, I like my PC.
Good for you.
Okay,
Joyce, I think it's going to be a learning curve.
You know what?
What?
Microsoft keeps putting this big thing on my computer when I open it up that they want to look for something, I don't know.
This is why you should have an iPad, by the way.
And then they say, well, I want my big computer, though.
I know, but Windows, you have to be a security guru to use it nowadays.
Oh, whatever.
I mean, you want to be a security guru if you want to. It could be a second career for you, Joyce.
I use my CCleaner and things like that. But
well, good for you. Somebody set you up.
And I have a good security system. Be very careful.
I got to tell you, it's so dangerous now with Windows. I get email all the time that looks like it came from my bank or from American Express.
Yeah, I know.
It's all phony baloney, and they're trying to get in your system. And sometimes those big pop-up windows that say, hey, it's time to download the latest Microsoft. It's not.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sometimes it's a lie. It's not Microsoft. It's bad guys.
I just exit off.
Good for you.
Okay.
Good for you.
Well, enjoy your lunch, whatever it ended up to be.
I'm having a lovely salad. And yes, I guess you get to hear all the stuff behind the scenes, don't you?
Okay. And
thank you, Joyce. Take care. Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I know people sometimes say, oh, Leo, you're such a shill for Apple. I'm not. But I have to say there are people, like my mom, like Joyce, for whom the iPad is a boon. It changes your experience of computing. You don't have to worry about viruses. It's simple to use, it's lightweight, it's intuitive, it's easy, and you do the things you want to do. And as you get older, staying in touch with the world, my mom's, you know, in Knitterly, which is a knitter's website, because she loves to knit, loves to do textiles, that's wonderful now. You're connected. And I think it's a great thing that Apple has done, really, creating these tablets. They're just fabulous. I should have told her. Joyce, if you're still listening... We do a weekly show called iPad Today, which is for iPad users, in which we talk about the iPad, and talk about applications, things you can do with it. And it's just a fun, lightweight show, but it's I do it with Sarah Lane. And it's on our Twit network. You can watch, I guess we do it every Monday at 1 p.m. on twit.tv. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You know who brought you this particular portion of the Tech Guy show? I bet you'd like to know. It's my friends at Citrix who do a wonderful program we use every day, I use every day, called ShareFile. I've told you about ShareFile, right? ShareFile solves a big problem. I say this all the time. I should have said it to Joyce. Don't open email attachments. But many people say to me when I say that, but Leo, in business, I need to send attachments. What am I supposed to do? Don't open attachments. Don't send attachments. Use ShareFile instead. It's the secure, fast way to send files via email. You're not sending a file attached to an email. That's bad because, first of all, that file's visible everywhere along the internet, along the way. It's like sending a postcard. Everybody can read it. A second, of course, that it's the number one way viruses and malware and spyware spread. So I'm already telling everybody you're sending those files to not to open them. Of course, the other problem is bounce backs. A lot of times these files in business are big presentations, spreadsheets, drawings, CAD designs, things like that. And they're so big that, frankly, email systems can't handle it. So use ShareFile instead. Instead of sending an attached file, you'll be sending a secure link. You control it. You can say who can download it, when, for how long. You can password protect it if you want. It's encrypted the whole way, so no one else can see it. I'm a big fan. I use ShareFile to share audio with the radio stations. You know, hi, this is Leo Laporte, whenever I'm in Indianapolis, I listen to www. In fact, I'll log into my ShareFile account. I'll show you what I do here. By the way, notice, which is really great, that your ShareFile page doesn't say ShareFile. It says your company name, has your company logo. When I transmit files, I'll do one real quickly. Let me send a, here's a stamps ad. All right, let me send. I'm going to press the send button. You can do this with a plugin in Outlook that makes it just like attachments. But I'm, and, or you can do the email on the web form. Or I could say, just give me a link. I can say how long that link's good for, when it expires. I could say how many times the user can download it. I can require an email, that kind of thing. Now, when I say send files, and by the way, it could be a file or many files, I'm going to get this secure link. And let me copy that and paste it, and I'll show you what my recipient receives. And this is nice. The recipient does not have to use ShareFile. They don't have to have an account. They don't have to sign up for anything. They don't even have to really understand how internet stuff works, because what they'll get is a link. They click the link, and this is the page. Download this file. And there's a big download button. This is easy. Anybody can use it. That's why I like it. If you're using email to send files in business, don't. Use Citrix's ShareFile. Visit ShareFile.com and click the microphone at the very top of the homepage where it says podcast listeners. Click here. Click that. Use the offer code TECHGUY, one word, and we've got 30 days free for you. ShareFile.com. Click the microphone. Enter the offer code TECHGUY. You're going to love it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. Sean in Detroit, Michigan. Hello, Sean.
Hello, Sean. Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. Welcome.
Good. This is the second time caller.
Well, it's good. You found your way back. I'm glad.
Okay, so my question is, well, basically, when it comes to my friends and family, I'm the Leo Laporte of my family. I'm the tech guy when it comes to...
Every family has one.
And so I wanted to take things up a notch. I wanted to start a YouTube show, but I wanted, you know, reviewing tech products and things of that nature.
Great
I wanted
idea.
To know how do I become a reviewer? How do I get products from the company to review?
Well, as you might imagine, the companies are going to be a little slow to send. You know, you can't just say, hey, I'm Sean and I do a YouTube channel. Send me stuff. Because they're afraid you're never going to give it back to them. So it is a little tough when you first start out as a reviewer to get stuff. Once you're established, if your channel has a lot of downloads and people pay attention to you, it's not going to be hard at all. I should say for ethical reasons, and I strongly encourage this, you absolutely must return everything you review. Software, maybe not, because the value of the software is so low. You know, it's just, you know, usually you don't even get a disc, you download it. But anything you get in hardware, a camera, a phone, a computer, return it. And in fact, I don't take loaners for the most part. I prefer to buy it because I don't want to be in the pockets of the company. So when I review an iPad or a Macintosh, a PC, for the most part, I've purchased it. Now, as you review a lot of stuff, a magazine, we have a review show. As you start reviewing more and more stuff, that's economically not feasible. So in those cases, we'll tell a company we're going to take it for 2 weeks. We promise you that we will review it. We do not promise you it will be a positive review. It may be a highly negative review. It often is. And sometimes companies give you heat. That's why I generally prefer to buy it. But obviously, as you're starting out, that's not going to happen. In fact, one of the reasons I do what I do is because in the early days of computing in the late 70s, I couldn't afford to buy the hardware and software I wanted to use, so I started reviewing it so I could get access to it. I guess what you're going to have to do, Sean, is start that YouTube channel first and buy or borrow what you can. Most companies, if they've never heard of you, they're not going to send you anything. I mean, you're just not, it's just not going to happen. And because of the sudden growth in blogs, YouTube reviews. I mean, there's in the old days, there were a few magazines. If you wrote for one of those magazines, no problem. But nowadays, you go to a trade show and you say, yeah, I have a blog. Unless they, you know, see that you've got a million viewers, they're not gonna do anything. Now, I'm going to point you to a guy who is doing a great job. He's really the king of YouTube reviewers. Really sweet guy, too. He's a college kid in New Jersey. I think he's only 20 or 21. His name is Marcus Brownlee, and his reviews on YouTube are MKBHD. This guy's got it down. He does a great job. I would absolutely look at what he does. You may want to try to do something different from what he does, since he kind of owns it. He gets everything nowadays. In fact, he'll get products that nobody else has, that nobody can get, and he's making some good money on YouTube. I would warn people, people don't get rich on YouTube. Even Marcus, probably, is not making his student, so he doesn't need to make a lot of money, but it probably is not making as much money as somebody who did this full time for a newspaper or magazine would. YouTube revenue is very low. They have ads. He has ads, and they monetize it, but they don't charge very much, and you get a small portion of the total anyway. So don't do these blogs or the YouTube to make money. You may be able to create a career. You may develop in time to be able to make a living. It's taken me, I started doing this, I said, in the late 70s, almost 40 years to be able to make a living doing this. It takes a long time, and you have to build your reputation. People have to get to know you. And when I started, it was a lot easier because there weren't all these blogs and YouTube sites. We didn't have YouTube when I was a kid. So it's even harder now to make a name for yourself and get your name out there. So to recap. Nobody's heard of you. Nobody's going to give you anything. You're not going to make any money at first. You're going to make, even if you're successful, very little money in the long run. It's a heck of a lot of work. You have to do it because you love it, because it's fun. Marcus loves playing with new products. He has now got to the point where he can make a living. And if not, he could get a job in a heartbeat. I've offered him a job several times, and he keeps turning me down. He's a full-time student. He wants to get his MBA. There are people making some money on YouTube, but they are a small number. The vast majority make nothing. And even the ones who are making money are making less than you think. It is YouTube keeps most of the money, frankly. So it's one of those, it's like everything you want to do, becoming a movie star, a jet pilot, the Queen of England. You gotta pay your dues. You gotta work your way up, and you're gonna be eating a lot of dust on the way. It's hard work. It's a slog, and you have to love it so much that's okay. Don't do it to make money. Don't do it because you want to become famous. Do it because you love it, and then, you know, you have a shot. And at the very least, you get to do something you like. So good luck to you, Sean. I think it's a great idea. Strongly encourage it. If it's something you love and you're going to do it anyway, but you got to realize there's thousands of people doing it already on YouTube, and you got to get head and shoulders above them. And if you're Samsung, you aren't going to send out 5,000 Galaxy S5s for review. It's tough. Shelley in Huntington Beach. Hi, Shelley.
Hi, Leo. How are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
Great. I have a question about software, I think, programming.
Okay.
My husband builds outdoor sheds.
Okay.
And we want to build a website. But what I want to do is have, since somebody goes on the website, have them be able to build online their shed to see what it looks like.
Oh, what a great idea.
Yeah.
Not easily done.
if it is, hopefully.
Yeah, it's a great idea. I love that idea. I mean, it's like going to a website and picking your eyeglasses, getting your face and putting them on. They can do that now on some sites. Or seeing what your new haircut might look like. Building a shed online would be wonderful. It's custom programming.
Okay.
So that's the problem. I doubt very much there is any off-the-shelf shed design for the web. See, there is shed design software, but not for the web.
Right.
So it's going to have to be written in, in the past it would have been written in Flash or Shockwave, but nowadays, because you want people using iPads to use it too, you can't use Flash, so somebody's going to have to use some pretty modern programming techniques. You're going to need a web developer who really knows what they're doing and can do it in JavaScript, CSS. And it can totally be done. It might surprise you how much it costs.
I bet it costs a lot.
I bet it costs a lot, too. I don't know. Okay. I'll give you an example, though. We just got a quote on redesigning our podcast website. You want to take a wild guess? Half $1 million.
Oh, yeah, that's right up our alley.
Yeah, I don't know. There might be good money in shed building, but I'm thinking you probably don't have $500,000 lying around to spend on your website.
No. Okay, well.
It's a great idea. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it, but what you're talking about, I would bet, you could go, what you could do is go on a website like Elance, ELANCE.com, and get a bid, but it's going to be $50,000 to $100,000. It really is. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, hour three of the Tech Guy Show. We're talking computers. We're talking the internet. We're talking home theater, smartphones, digital photography, anything you want to talk about. If it's got a chip in it for this Father's Day, I'll talk about it. Our phone number, 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can use Skype to call us if you're outside those countries. It still won't cost you anything. And we have a website, a great website, techguylabs.com. And every time we talk about something, for instance, I put an article up there that came out in the New York Times in February about a young woman who has a YouTube channel, Olga K. This was in regards to our call from last hour. Guy wants to become a YouTube star, wants to do video reviews, wants to know how to get free stuff. And I really try, I try to do conflicting things. On the one hand, I want to encourage you. Everybody should follow their bliss, should follow their dream, should create. Human beings are naturally creative. Do it. But do it because you love it. Because I want to discourage you from the idea that you're going to make a mint doing it or you're going to become rich and famous. Because you're probably not. So it's just like if somebody comes to you and says, hey, I want to be a movie star. I love to act. If they love to act, you say, go ahead and act. That's great. Chances of becoming a movie star aren't great, but what the heck? You never know. Look at Dustin Hoffman. But he's a great actor. Maybe you're a great actor. Maybe you're going to beat the odds and become a YouTube star. The other bit of information, though, that's important is that even if you become a YouTube star, the chances of you making a lot of money are still nil. It turns out YouTube stars aren't making a lot of money, and that's why I put this article up on the show notes. From the New York Times, Olga K works her butt off, 20 shows a week. That's 3 shows a day, 7 days a week. And she's got to come up with new ideas. She's got to shoot them. She's got to edit them. She says she's made every year for the last 3 years about $100,000. Not bad money, but she's working really, really hard to do it. And that's the most recent 3 years she's been doing this for 7. So the first 4 years, she probably wasn't making anything. There are things you could do that you would make a better living. But if this is what you dream of, this is your heart's desire, then you should do it. Just be realistic. Understand it's a long shot. And even if you really succeed. Now, the top 10 YouTube broadcasters probably make very good money. We're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. There might even be people like Jenna Marbles. She might even be approaching $1 million a year, although if she is, most of that's probably coming from other stuff she does. The fame that she's achieved on YouTube is translated into other things. Fred Figglesworth, who was a very annoying yet very popular kids star on YouTube, was able to parlay that into a Nickelodeon TV show and a movie and so forth. So, I'm not saying you couldn't make a go of it and do quite well, become rich and famous. But that shouldn't be your motivation, because most people don't do it because you love it. Figglehorn. Sorry. Foo says, it's not Figglesworth, it's Figglehorn. All I know is it's annoying. And you might say, well, you're just an old mainstream media type. You're just jealous. Actually, I do pretty well on the internet. I actually one of the people who has found a way to make a living doing internet broadcasting, not just this radio show, but the 10 other shows I do every week. They do very well. But that's, I understand how hard it is, how unusual that is. You see, you're trying to pull up the ladder after you. You just want to own it all. No, I love it. I think what makes the internet a success is that everybody's putting the stuff they care the most about out there. Have a blog, have a video channel. The great thing is it's democratized, it's free, it's easy. Anybody can do it. So do it. Just don't expect, fame and fortune. Heather raised a really interesting question about netiquette. Do people still use that word, netiquette?
I think we need a new word. Electronic boundaries?
Boundaries are good.
Yeah.
So nowadays, because we all carry these little computers and we even keep them by our bed, everybody is kind of always online, always available. But we have some pretty big rules about not calling, not ringing a phone in the middle of the night.
Yeah, I think that still applies to, like, polite society.
Nobody's calling your home phone and making that phone ring at 3 a.m. And if they do, it's scary. And you pick it up and say, what? What's going on? What's the matter?
Exactly.
So people learn. But for some reason on the cell phone, particularly with texting, they don't feel that way. They'll text at 3 in the morning. They'll text drunk.
Somebody did text me at 1:30 and it woke me up. And I was so angry with this person when we went round and round about it. And not all of it was even on text. Like some of it was Facebook message. And I'm like, that's where you should message someone if it's after midnight.
See, I understand that and I agree. But on the other hand, I turn off all sounds after 10 p.m. and I don't turn them on again to 6. And one of the reasons I do that is because my bank texts me at 3 in the morning. I can't stop that.
I don't think it's incumbent on me to put on the do not disturb thing every night, because what if I forget? So if you wake up in the middle of the night and you think you're going to text me and I'll just get back to you whenever, do know that you've woken me up.
Because Heather doesn't turn off her phone. So whose fault is it? That's the question we pose you now at 8888 Ask Leo. Should it be incumbent on Heather and all of us to turn on the do not disturb? Or
can we frame the question as, is it okay to text after midnight?
Is it okay
someone
to text?
You don't know very well when you have front of you.
Would it be okay for that person to wake you up if he knew you well?
Yeah, actually, I thought it was my so-called boyfriend, and I'm like, what's he doing texting me at this time of night?
That didn't bother you if it was him, but it's a stranger.
It did.
Oh, it did. All right.
Both of those things would sort of bother me. But again, okay, so here's my thing on text. Implies intimacy, A, and urgency, B, or like a really good flirt.
See, I get texts. I rarely get flirty texts. Almost always they're banks, you know, they're alerts. Mm-hmm. And so I just turn the phone off because I know even if it's a flirty text, I don't want it between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. I'm sleeping
don't
now.
Don't get me all riled up. Yeah.
So, okay. Well, that's a good question. Is it Heather's fault? Should she have her phone turned off? Or should you just be a little more thoughtful and not be sending texts in the middle of the night?
Yes.
8888-ESK-LEO. I wouldn't say you're wrong. Everybody has a point of view. But I think that we live now, unfortunately, in a world where we're always available. That's kind of a problem, isn't it? I notice I don't sleep as well as I used to. Now, maybe that's just because I'm getting old. But it also could be because there's so many jingly jangly. and you know what the real thing is that's bad? In the old days, I'd wake up at 3 in the morning. I'd lie there till I went back to sleep. Now, I go reach over my phone. I shine a bright light in my eyes. And my body's going, hey, good morning. So that's it.
Right.
It's not good for insomnia to pick up a phone or a tablet. Doctors say that. They say you're fooling your body into thinking it's bright light, it's daytime. Can't wake up. But it's hard for me with a phone sitting right there, and I could check my crops, check my texts.
Time to milk the cows.
Milk the cows.
Make the donuts.
It's, you know, so I've actually started putting my phone and my tablets and my computers not in the bedroom, just like leave them in my den. Then I'd have to get up out of bed and go to then. I'm not going to do that, so I'll just lie there staring at the ceiling. That's better for you. Logan says, switch to a red backlight. It won't wake you up. Then you can harvest your crops and go back to sleep. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. We're taking calls. We're talking high tech. We're solving the world's problems. And I think netiquette, it's a changing thing all the time, right? I'll give you another example of netiquette. Don't send me electronic greeting cards. My mom does that. Mom, I love you. That's okay if you do it because I know you don't know any better. But, you know, when you are sending an electronic greeting, that's now become the thing. Instead of a paper card, people send you a Father's Day greeting card. It's got a cute cartoon. And you open it. And A, you're giving your dad's email address to some company you don't know. That's always a bad idea. People should start treating email addresses as a little more precious than just something you give out. Somebody else's. And B, unless you're really sure that that little download that's dancing and humming is safe, you could be sending your dad malware. Don't do it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Maybe you've already sent dad an e-greeting. If you have, fine. That's fine. It's probably okay. But if you haven't, might want to think twice about whether you should give dad's email address to some third party you don't really know. Maybe that's not the best thing to do. Call him. That's a good idea. I'm going to call my dad right after the show. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. And as for Heather and her little problem of getting texts in the middle of the night, I don't know if we've reached consensus, but I think a lot of people think it really is incumbent on you and turning on the do not disturb.
All right. Fine.
I agree. We should all think about the other person at the other end before we send a text in the middle of the night. So bottom it's line. maybe it's shared responsibility.
Okay.
How deal. About that?
I feel better though.
Yeah, you vented.
I got all wound up.
Did you yell at the person? Did you say, "How dare you send me
email.
A
email?"
You did? What did like all caps with exclamation marks?
No. But I very much set this person straight. sorry. Boy, did he back off.
Woo. Well, I think you probably won't receive any middle of the night emails from him. That's another way to handle it.
Hey, there, I succeeded.
You succeeded. Job well done. John is on the line from Mount Juliet, Tennessee. Hi, John.
Hello, Leo.
Welcome to the show.
A long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you.
I have a question with external battery packs. For some reason, the polymer-type batteries always seem to lose capacities after a few months. Why is this? Whether devices or battery packs, doesn't matter. Got that type of battery in it I've had really.
Really? So lithium-ion is the technology used for most batteries, and you're right. There's some that are lithium-ion polymer batteries. They are really no different than any of the other lithium-ion technologies. It's really more about the packaging.
But I have noticed the fail rate, for some reason, I don't know why that is, 90% fail rate. I mean, even in devices, I have an Arcos Home Connect. After 6 months on that, the battery inside, which is also polymer, went bad. I'd get like 30%, 40% less runtime on it now, and I took care of it. It just doesn't seem to matter.
I don't share your experience, so I don't really know what's going on. Most cell phone batteries are now lithium-ion polymer. That's, they're lithium-ion cells packaged in a polymer package. This is the probably most common kind of battery rechargeable you use. The rules on lithium-ion batteries are very simple. There is a certain number of times they can be charged and discharged. And that number is usually around 500, but it could be more, it could be less. I don't know where you're getting your batteries, so that might impact it. But that's the only fact that matters is total number of recharges. So a half charge is half a full recharge. Two half charges is one full cycle. There's no rule about letting it drain all the way or charging it fully before you use it. You'll see a lot of that. Those are urban legends. They're old wives' tales. They did affect previous technologies. They don't affect lithium-ion batteries. All that matters is the number of cycles. Now, temperature can affect it. So maybe you live in you're in Tennessee. Maybe it's very hot there. Maybe they're getting less protection than they ought to. I would make sure they don't sit in the sun like on your dashboard in the car. But I don't think that there is, I think that they're pretty efficient and pretty effective. And unless you're buying cheap batteries, you're going to get your 500 or 1,000 charges. Or you're leaving it on the dashboard and it's getting hot. I don't know of anything else that matters. Lithium ion polymer batteries have been used by everybody from Samsung to NASA. And it's a well-known technology. It's very reliable. And in fact, very predictable. It if you get through those 500 cycles or whatever the charge cycles are, it'll just stop working. It doesn't even have the charge curve doesn't even change much through that lifetime. It does a little bit towards the end, but you keep about 80% of your capacity through the cycles, through the 500 cycles. The only rules that I know of with lithium batteries, and this is true of lithium-ion polymer batteries as well, is it's okay to keep them fully charged, because remember, we're counting discharge charge cycles. So if you it's not a good idea to let your phone drain and charge, because that's using up those cycles. If you're going to be at the office and you've got a place to plug in your phone, just keep it plugged in, because every drain and charge counts against your 500. So it's okay to keep your phone fully charged and not let it discharge. That saves the battery. There's no rule at all about fully discharging or fully recharging or, you know, conditioning. All of that's bogus. If you're going to store it, I've heard, and this comes from reliable scientists who make these things and study them, it's a good idea to store it at about 50%. That's it. Those are the rules. Don't put it on the, don't let it get hot. Don't put it on the windowsill in the sun. All of that stuff. Otherwise, I don't know why you're having trouble. Make sure you, I usually buy batteries from the original manufacturer. If it's a Samsung phone, I'll get Samsung batteries. Although there are a few good third parties that I trust. Anker is one, A-N-K-E-R. A-N-K-E-R. Make sure to use the charger that came with your phone. I suppose you could have issues there. But this is pretty reliable. In fact, it's an amazing technology. So amazing that that's what Tesla's using in their cars. And they've had good results with it. Charles, Monterey, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Charles.
Hello, Leo. How are you, sir?
I am well. How are you?
I'm great. Happy Father's Day.
Thank you. You too.
I was curious if you might know of one or two companies that are working on Linux for tablets.
Well, you know, Android is Linux. So in that respect, most tablets are Linux. But if you're talking about a full, like, Linux Mint or Ubuntu Linux on tablets, gosh, that's a good question. You know, Linux is not by its nature touch-focused. That's one of the reasons we like Android, because it is a touch version of Linux, basically.
Okay.
But it's, if you're saying, I want the bash shell, see, to me, what Linux is a kernel based on Linus Torvalds' Linux operating system. He's a guy who created it in 1994. That Linux kernel is a standard. All Android devices run on it. And then, so that's Linux. And then what you put on top of it is specific to the distribution, what window manager you use, what software you install, what software installer you use. All of that is up to the company that makes the distribution, Ubuntu or Fedora or Red Hat, whoever it is. And they make different decisions about what the package includes. But Android phones, they're pure Linux. You can even put a bash shell on it, I think. I do believe that Firefox is making tablets. Ubuntu is as well. I just don't think they're very good. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. If you really want to know the skinny on batteries and charging, this is an interesting site. I'm not sure I agree with everything I'm reading on it. And I think it also, you can also misunderstand some of what they're saying, but clearly they're very interested in the science of lithium ion and lithium polymer batteries. It's called Battery University. BatteryUniversity.com. And it talks about lithium ion batteries and blah, blah, blah. The basic rules of thumb that they offer at the end are accurate. A portable device should be turned off while charging. That means that the battery can charge fully without being interrupted. Parasitic load, that is using the device while you're charging it, confuses the charger, although many of us do that, and I don't think there's any real harm to that. They do say charge at a moderate temperature. Do not charge below freezing. Furthermore, if the battery gets excessively warm, discontinue using the charger and or the battery. One of the big risks with lithium-based batteries is they can explode if they're overcharged. All modern chargers, all modern phones, all modern laptops have protection against overcharging. You don't have to worry about that. But if for some reason you felt that getting really hot, it might be, that's how they explode. They overheat and they catch on fire. That might be a good idea to disconnect it. They do say something that's maybe a little controversial. Lithium ion does not need to be fully charged. A partial charge is better, by which they mean 80 or 90%. And they point out that modern phones, because they're going for maximum runtime, will almost always overcharge, preferring longer runtime to longer battery life. And I think that's actually correct. I think that's what you want. You want to get the 14 hours, or the 10 hours, or whatever you can out of your phone, as opposed to having that battery last a month or two longer. But if that were a concern, if you wanted to have that you were more concerned that the battery lasts more than 2 years, which is pretty typical. You want it to last 2 years and 2 months, then don't charge to 90%, not 100%. I wouldn't worry about it. Over-discharged batteries can be boosted back to life again. Discard the pack if the voltage does not rise to a normal level within a minute while on boost. I don't even know what that means or how that would happen. Don't worry about it. In most cases, the phone or the device will protect you from both over-discharging and over-charging. Those are both dangerous situations, and so the circuitry protects you. Mostly, you don't have to worry about it. That's really the bottom line. George in Santa Monica, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good afternoon, Leo. Happy Father's Day to you.
Thank you. You too.
And after viewing and listening to your show over time, you mentioned there's no such thing as a stupid question.
I love the dumber the question, the smarter I sound. So yeah. Have at it.
You were talking about bandwidth earlier in the first hour.
Yeah.
My question I came up with, is there such a thing as a home bandwidth generator that we can have and make our own bandwidth?
Well, to understand what bandwidth is, you have to understand a little bit about the internet and how it works. Really, and this is maybe a little abstract, so I'll try to make it straightforward. The idea of an internet is it's a network of networks. So you have your home network, your neighbor has their home network, Sony has its network, Yahoo has its network, Google has its network, and the internet is what connects those networks together so that you can, from your home network, which might just be one computer or one phone, reach out across the cloud to Google's network and access it and access whatever devices or services Google publishes publicly on that network. That's how the internet works. So bandwidth merely means how fat that pipe is between you and Google or you and Yahoo or you and Disney or whoever or Netflix. If it's a very fat pipe, you can get more bits down it faster. If it's a narrow pipe, you can get smaller. You know, you can't get as many bits through. And, of course, a company like Netflix that occupies almost half of all the internet traffic during the busiest hours is pushing bits down the pipes to a lot of people all at once. They've got, of course, a big fat pipe. Think of Netflix as a building with a giant pipe coming out of it, all those bits coming out of it, and then those bits distributed to you via kind of a tree system. So it's coming from Netflix, and then they have some major backbone providers. Level 3 is an example. So Netflix sends the data to Level 3. Level 3 then interconnects, and this is where things get congested, interconnects to other networks. Those interconnects have big, fast switches that can handle a lot of traffic. But if there's more traffic than they're designed to handle, they can saturate and not be able to keep up, in which case you have to add more switches. And then it finally gets to you. Your internet service provider is yet another network. It's the one you join to go out and join the other networks. And they can also get saturated. They can get overloaded. They've got a big switch. If you're a cable customer, for instance, they've got a big switch in your neighborhood. They call it the head end, where all the connectivity from the cable company goes to there and is distributed to you and your neighbors. That can become saturated. If all your neighbors are watching Netflix and the cable company hasn't planned for that, if they haven't put a big enough switch in there, it can get overloaded and your Netflix performance will deteriorate. There's no possible way for you to improve this situation. All you can do is make sure that you have the biggest pipe you can afford, the fastest switches you can afford. And because you're not using that much, it's not expensive to do it. In fact, the cable modem or the DSL modem you got from your provider, the switches, routers you buy from Linksys or Netgear or any of those companies, those are all adequate to the task, more than adequate. They can send, you know, billions of bits a second in most cases, a gigabit we call it. They certainly can send 100,000 megabits a second. That's more than enough for full quality 4K beautiful video from Netflix. That's not the problem. The problem is upstream of you. So you can have as big a pipe as you want. And in most cases, you probably have sufficient. That's one of the problems is people think, my bandwidth's not enough to keep up with Netflix. It's usually not the problem. The problem is upstream. that your internet service provider hasn't put a big enough switch on its connection to Netflix. Very often that's the case. And that's what Netflix has been complaining about with Verizon and others. That's why they put up a message on some Verizon customers that said, hey, you're as a Verizon customer, you're not getting the bandwidth you deserve, so we're going to lower the quality of the video. What they're trying to tell you is it's not your fault and it's not our fault. It's Verizon's fault. That's the big pipe that is not keeping up. So I would not worry at all about your home internet system. Make sure that, you know, if you're using Wi-Fi, that you have a good signal. But if you have a good modern router and a good modern modem, whether it's DSL or cable modem, you probably have more than enough bandwidth. And, you know, when you buy bandwidth from an internet service provider, they often have tiers of service. You can get a slower, less expensive service. It may max out. So if you're getting, commonly on DSL, people buy inexpensive service that costs maybe $12-13 a month, and you're getting 1.5 megabits down, that may not be good enough to watch high-def video. It probably isn't on Netflix. If you want a high-def video on Netflix, you're going to have to buy a higher level of service. But generally, most people, especially with cable modems, if you're, you know, it's a little harder with DSL because you have to be close to the central office, but If you've got 5 megabits per second down, almost everybody does by this point, that's plenty for Netflix. So you don't need a bandwidth pump in your basement. It isn't going to help you. What we've got to do is we've got to get your cable companies and your internet companies to improve their connections to Netflix. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Oh, the Tech Guy Show brought to you today by My Domain Registrar. Usually when you talk about things like that, infrastructure things, you don't like get all excited. You say, I'm loyal to, but I am brand loyal to Hover.com. I love Hover.com. Maybe it's because the other domain registrars are so awful. That's why I appreciate Hover.com. They've made domain name registration and management as simple as can be. Yeah, I know they don't have the sexy ads, but they also don't have 50 clicks to buy a domain name. And once you've got the domain name, they've got the best service and support in the business. No hold support. When you call, a real live person will is there, empowered to help you. They'll fix the problem without putting you on hold, without making you wait, without transferring. Hover's customer support knows their stuff and they're friendly. But you know what? I don't think you're ever going to need to call them because Hover's so good. So let's say I'm going to start a business. I want to sell fancy pants. Let's see if fancy pants is available. So you do a search on fancy pants. And unfortunately, somebody's already got fancypants.com. Me. Because I registered it. But let's say, what else do we got? Oh, look at all these interesting domains. Now, of course, they've got .com, .net, which is always a good alternative if you can't get the .com. But now they have all sorts of new ones, like the .club domain. Let's say I want a fancy pants club. I can get fancypants.club. Wouldn't that cool? I love it. If you're a Rotary Club, a Moose Club, if you got the Moose Lodge, the Petaluma Moose Lodge, I could have Petaluma Moose Club, .club. It tells people what your website's all about. It's built right in. And Hover's got it. Along with, 50 or 60. Wait a minute. What does it say? 155 other domains. Amazing. I love this. All over the world, too. Here's the deal. Go to Hover.com. Look for the domain name. Register it. Transfer your domain names to Hover. They've got a concierge service. It'll make it easy to do. They even have instructions so you could do it yourself. And when you transfer, for $10, you'll get a full year renewal plus all the great features of Hover. Don't forget the great domain name management service. Let me log into my account. I'll show you all my Hover.com domains. I have quite a few, as you can see. I moved them all over there. I've got 29 domain names, including, of course, my home domain and Leoville.com and .net, Leoville.tv, Leolaporte.net. I've got my kids' names, and of course, I have my company names as well. Domain name management could be no easier. You can do everything in bulk all at once. You can, and by the way, Hover includes all the things you'd want, like domain redirection, email redirection, and who is privacy in the price. Clean and simple website. Within minutes, you'll be able to find the domain name you want, register it, and get on with your life. Hover.com. All I ask is you get 10% off your first purchase by using our offer code TTG and the number 6. Hover.com. Use the offer code TTG6 for 10% off. We love them. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. We talk about anything, though. Anything. 827-5536. Actually, you know what? This is the last segment of the show, so I think we probably have enough calls, Heather, if I'm not mistaken. I think we're probably booked. In fact, let me see if how many I can do here real quickly. Let's go to Lugoff, South Carolina. Mark is on the line. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Leo. How you doing today?
I'm well. Welcome. What can I do for you?
I manage content for a website for a genealogical society. It's built in Joomla.
Okay.
And they were asking me about moving that to something maybe a little more modern, a little more flashy, like maybe Squarespace or something.
So what Joomla is what we call a CMS, or content management system. And there are lots of them. WordPress is a CMS. Squarespace is a hosting company that has its own custom CMS. It doesn't have a name. It's just Squarespace. Right. On our sites, we use a CMS called Drupal, D-R-U-P-A-L, that I like a lot. Not very flashy, though. when you say you want a flashy CMS, I'm not sure what... what that would be.
I think what they're looking at, because, you know, in Joomla, you can build stuff in there to make it more pictures, make it more attractive, but it's not quite as modern looking, not quite as slick looking.
Well, Squarespace certainly would be. Now, the Squarespace CMS, it depends on what you're doing. You know, one of the advantages of something like a hosted WordPress or Joomla or Drupal is you can really customize it. You can add modules. You can get very sophisticated. Less so with Squarespace. I mean, it's pretty good in that regard. But it has basic features that everybody would want. And the good thing about Squarespace is that it is very flashy and very modern. Tell me a little bit about the site. What does it need to do?
We put a lot of genealogy-related content on there. There's articles. We have a pretty large user base and a couple of thousand registered users.
Excellent.
We also have e-commerce. We use VirtueMark for that. We use Community Builder to manage the membership database.
All of that would work, I think, nicely on Squarespace, and you could use their commerce system, which I think is very elegant. The nice thing about Squarespace is you don't have to really stay up on modern web technologies like responsive design. And nowadays, everybody wants full-bleed images that fill the page. All of these things are kind of automatic on Squarespace. You can do them in anything, Joomla, Drupal, anything. But they come with Squarespace. And their engineers are always updating this stuff. So I would, you know, one of the advantages of Squarespace, you could try it free for 2 weeks and see. And you can even import your content. They have.
Yeah, because there's a lot of content. So we'd probably hire some company to do that. I don't know how.
They have automatic importers, but they're for kind of the big blog APIs, WordPress, Blogger, stuff like Typepad. So if Joomla can export your data, it's probably a MySQL database, I would guess.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So I'm sure that if you can't use off the shelf their importers, you could go to them, say we're a nonprofit. I'm sure they have prices, special pricing for nonprofits. You go to them, say we're a nonprofit, we'd like some help moving our data in. I think they would help you with that. Before you do that, though, I would say try it for a couple of weeks, just yourself personally. Satisfy yourself that it will do the things you need to do. We don't, for instance, I use Squarespace for our company blog because it's great for that, but we can't use it for our big company site because of the kinds of things we want to do with the data really requires more programming, more capability than Squarespace will offer us. So we actually use Drupal for that but Drupal, let me tell you, it's expensive. You have to get engineers. It's a big deal, and they have to understand Drupal, and there's a lot of programming involved. So you know, you trade off for flexibility, you trade off convenience and price.
A little bit easier to move to something like Squarespace.
I think if Squarespace does what you want, you should absolutely go there. Yeah. The question is if it'll have the features, all the features you need. It sounds like from what you just described, it will. But the best way to do it, and this is one of the reasons they offer a 2-week free trial, just go there and try it. I would say of all the choices out there, that's going to be the one that's going to give you the best looking website, without a doubt, with the least amount of expertise on your part. But, you know, the reason we use Drupal is not because it's so fancy, Dan. It's actually very rock solid, kind of pedestrian in its back end design. But because it scales so well, we can handle a lot of traffic. And it's fully customizable if you're willing to hire somebody. You know, this is why we got a quote for $450,000 to update our website. You have to hire designers. You have to hire programmers. It becomes a very elaborate process. But you'll find most companies that are technology companies that the web presence is important is more than just a brochure. They are spending a lot of money on their website. What's problematic from my point of view is things are changing. The web page becomes less and less important for companies as apps become more and more important, especially content companies. Now, that's not your problem, but that's certainly my problem. As a content company, people no longer just go to a web page and read the content. When's the last time you went to a site and read the content on there? Most likely, you're following links from Twitter or Facebook or somewhere else, jumping into the middle of the website, reading that article, and leaving. So the website is a very different kind of thing than the days when the website would be this monolith, like the New York Times. You'd go and you'd visit the New York Times website, and you'd read all the pages. It's not like that. You will read an article in the New York Times because somebody linked to it. You'll jump into it and you'll jump out. Things have changed considerably, and this is part of the expense and trouble of keeping up. Good luck. I think it's a very important thing for a nonprofit to be aware of, obviously. That's your primary point of communication with your donor base. So that's really important. So you got to do it right. Ernie in Mount Washington, Kentucky. Hi, Ernie. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We've got a minute or two, so let's see if we can help you here.
Okay. 3 weeks ago, my computer said when I was watching Netflix, you need to download Silverlight.
Right.
Okay. Then this week, my wife's computer's doing the same thing. And I went around and around with my computer. I even went so far as to have them erase everything and reload everything.
No, Silverlight is the technology. You know, you've heard of Flash. Silverlight is Microsoft's version of Flash. It's what Netflix uses, although they're moving away from it because Microsoft is moving away from it.
Okay.
So you do need, right now, you do need Netflix on your Windows desktop if you want to watch Netflix movies.
Okay.
Well, they are eliminating that in the apps, but you got to install it. And you just go to Microsoft.com/Silverlight, and you can install it.
Okay, I've done that. It only works with Windows. I'm mainly a Chrome user, but it won't work with Chrome. It has to work with Windows.
Oh, you mean Internet Explorer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It should work. That's a surprise to me. I haven't ever had trouble using Netflix on the Chrome.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good question. Chatroom, you got any idea of Netflix and Silverlight working on Chrome? It should work. I don't know. We'll have to do some research and put it on the website. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.